before President Reagan ordered U.S. troops into Honduras last Wednesday, this is the man he consulted, his chief military advisor, a Navy admiral with a doctorate in political science, Admiral William Crowell, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. The admiral hails from landlocked Oklahoma, but he decided as a boy that he wanted to be a sailor. Today at 63, he's something of a maverick. And as Mike Wallace found out, he's blunt, smart, and outspoken.
This is an American soldier's hat in World War I.
In the unlikely event that the United States were to go to war with the Soviet Union over the next couple of years, the top U.S. military officer would be Bill Crowell, showing off his hat collection in his Pentagon office. And who is he showing his hats to? To the man at the top of the Soviet military, Marshal Sergei Akhramov. This encounter took place last December during the summit talks. After a breakfast meeting in the admiral's office, he took the marshal to meet for an hour with the chiefs of all the U.S. armed services. And what does Admiral Crowell think of his potential enemy?
He's an impressive man.
Is he?
Yes, he is. And he lights up when he smiles. He is candid, not polemical. At least I did not find him polemical. I didn't hear a word of ideology.
Trustworthy?
Well, that's a different question. I think that requires some time, but not untrustworthy, no, not at all.
The two of you meet. What comes out of this meeting?
I was interested, too, as to what was going to come out of it. I had in mind one major topic, which it happened that he also had in mind.
Which was?
Further or more military-to-military contact between the Soviet and the U.S. military. Either at a low level, a training level, or even field commanders. At least meeting each other, talking to each other, exchanging views on doctrine, tactics, strategy, developing a better understanding.
Are you going to?
I certainly hope so. You know, this is the first time that the chiefs of the general staff of the Soviet Union and the number one military man in the United States have had a substantive meeting and conversation since World War II.
Most of the time, the admiral is chained to his desk in the Pentagon, so he relished a chance to get a first-hand look at some U.S. troops in action. He took us to Fort Campbell, Kentucky, home of the 101st Airborne Division, the Screaming Eagles, with the chairman, Major General Teddy Allen, who commands the 20,000 men and women of the 101st. The annual budget for this division, $480 million. The 101st has benefited handsomely from the military buildup under President Reagan, like these new Black Hawks that can move a dozen combat soldiers at a time, day or night, in any kind of weather. They cost $6 million apiece.
Teddy, if Lee had had one of these at Gettysburg, you wouldn't have had a problem.
Whiskey Flight is clear of Foxtrot.
It's important that we get in as quick as we can and disembark from helicopters as fast as we can and get moving.
His troops' mission, according to General Allen, is to counter any aggressive enemy move in any vital region, like, for instance, the Persian Gulf.
We are told, anyway, that the Soviets, if they decided to move, could be there and in charge before our rapid deployment force could get there.
I don't know what the Russians' capability is to reinforce with a rival station, but it doesn't make a difference to me.
How do you mean?
I get there, I'll fight whatever's there.
I think the really impressive thing about what Teddy does and what he's talking about is not that he can go to the Persian Gulf, but that he can go anywhere in the world.
Any place in the world.
Anywhere in the world. Jungle, desert, Arctic, we're prepared.
Though the chairman may sound like a hawk in the field, back in Washington, he has dismayed many conservatives by coming out strongly for the new treaty with the Soviets, banning medium-range missiles. And he would like to see big cuts in long-range missiles, too. The cuts that are now being negotiated.
Yeah, those are really the most terrifying offensive weapons. That's the guts of the arms reduction dialogue.
You are not the hawk that Caspar Weinberger was about the Soviet Union. You're willing to have something proved to you by the people from the Soviet Union, military and political.
Well, I'm wary. I consider myself wary. But I really believe that Mr. Gorbachev has concluded that he can't have a first-rate country with a second-rate economy, and that he has to do something about it. Now, what he's going to do and whether he's going to succeed and how it's going to impact us remains to be seen. But we shouldn't just fanatically dismiss such an opportunity if in fact it materializes.
Just down the hall from Admiral Krause's Pentagon office is the reminder of just how sensitive our relations between the two superpowers, something few people in this building get a chance to see. The 24-hour Washington-Moscow hotline, reserved for the exclusive use of the President, the Commander-in-Chief.
I was under the impression the hotline was a telephone, that President Reagan or somebody picks up the phone and talks to Gorbachev. No.
Nope. Not in this case.
Why?
Because there's less mistakes in written word. We feel better about it, and I think they do as well.
Meantime, to foster better communication, Admiral Krause has invited his Soviet counterpart, Marshal Akhramayev, back for another visit, and the Marshal has accepted.
Thank you.
I told him that was the biggest problem with the summit, is that he didn't see the United States as long as he saw Washington. I told him until he'd seen Oklahoma, he hadn't seen the United States.
The biggest ship Bill Krause has ever commanded was a diesel submarine. Instead of going on to nuclear subs, he chose instead to go to Princeton to get himself a doctorate in political science. After that, he served in Vietnam as an advisor to the South Vietnamese Navy. Aboard the Admiral's plane, we talked about Vietnam.
MIAs, do they exist? We hear so much about sightings of live Americans still there, still captive. You, more than any other man in the military, probably should know whether indeed there is evidence to suggest that there are living MIAs.
We've had hundreds of reports of sightings, but frankly, we have not been able to affirm a single, really affirm a single report of a living MIA against his will in Vietnam.
Following Vietnam came one promotion after another, from the Middle East to NATO's southern flank, to the Pacific, and finally to the very top. The Joint Chiefs meet three times a week in a room in the Pentagon known as the Tank.
General?
Chief Staff, General Bono.
The fact that the Chiefs stand when the Chairman enters is something new, for each service has been traditionally fiercely independent. The opinions of each service were given equal weight, which meant that the joint reports they finally came up with were often so watered down, they were of little use to anyone. But 2 years ago, the Congress changed all that. Now, the view that decides in the end is Admiral Krause. He's the boss, even if some of the chiefs disagree. We saw some of this same jointness, that's Pentagon jargon, at Fort Campbell. Supporting the Army men on the ground, new Air Force A-10 jets. The chairman is trying hard against continuing bitter resistance to make cooperation among the U.S. Armed Services standard procedure these days, as with the current joint operations in the Persian Gulf. Admiral Krause is determined that all such operations be run by a unified command under one top officer, without each squabbling service trying to call its own shots.
And no matter what service that top man comes from, the others fall in line.
That's right.
Was it a fight to get it to happen?
Well, it's... No, it wasn't a fight, but it was a spirited discussion.
The chairman is even more spirited on the subject of Iran-Contra dealings. He was outraged that neither he nor any of the chiefs were ever consulted or even informed from the beginning about the Reagan administration's sale of arms to Iran.
I wasn't informed and I didn't appreciate it. I didn't think that was right. And I think that we should have been brought into it, particularly because of the expertise that had some military content and that we could bring to bear on the problem.
And you were kept out?
We were kept out, obviously intentionally.
Is Oliver North a national hero, Admiral Krause? The president has said so, the vice president has said so.
I would quickly define a hero as somebody that has done exceptionally well and has kept his boss informed, made sure that his boss is informed of what's going on.
Where does Oliver North come out on that scale?
I don't think I would use the word hero.
And what about Admiral John Poindexter, the former National Security Advisor to the President?
I was sort of shocked by the testimony I heard that he acted on his own and did not keep the President informed of what he was doing.
He thought he knew what the detail was and he was going to take care of it, apparently, for the Commander-in-Chief.
But I found that very disturbing. not just as a military officer, but as an American.
Should a military officer be the president's national security advisor? Poindexter was. General Colin Powell is today.
I'm on the record as opposing that.
Why?
Because I felt it puts him in a very difficult position.
Oh.
With his loyalties to the military and also then throwing him into the political cauldron. And the National Security Advisor is in the political cauldron, and he is forced, rightfully so, to put him, the president's interest right there first, et cetera, et cetera. And I always thought that was part of the problem with John Poindexter.
But what gravels the chairman most these days are budget cuts, like a recent Senate order to the military to reduce the officer corps by 1%. The chiefs fear that cut is just the beginning.
Are we going to satisfy them, or is there a further cut coming?
And that's a
will it satisfy them?
No.
Don't know.
No? I think it's going to take a fundamental change in the attitude that we've seen from Senator Glenn. And I don't see us making any headway whatsoever on that.
Well, Secretary Carlucci is going to have to be brought into it. And we're going to have to make our case, and we're going to have to get him into it. We really are.
The military is going to have to cut back $500 billion in expenses over the next 5 years. Is that correct?
There's some estimates to that effect.
Can you do it safely?
We can't do it without the risk rising, and perhaps dramatically. Now, one of the complicated things here is you've got to understand is when you cut the budget today, you're not going to see the impact of it for 2, 3, maybe 4 years, and your risk then goes up. And we take budget cuts not in reducing commitments or reducing operations, we take them out of the skin or hide of our people.
And how dangerous is that?
If it continues, it can become very dangerous.
Now we head to the Air Assault School, the 10 toughest days of your life.
Wait!
Here at Fort Campbell is one vivid example of what worries the Admiral most about those budget cuts.
What you're seeing here is the heart of what we're doing. And the most valuable resource we got are these people. And when we're going to cut back, which it looks like we're going to have to money-wise, the one thing we can't cut back is to attract quality people, train them, keep them motivated. And we're going to work real hard. That's our first priority.
You know, military, an adequate military force is expensive. But going to war is 50 times expensive. If you think we spend a lot of money on the military today, the day we enter general hostilities, as George Will would say, it'll be chopped liver what we spend today.
One gets the feeling that war with the Soviet Union, war among the superpowers, war with China, war is now unthinkable, impossible.
I'm paid to think otherwise. And that, of course, would be a dangerous philosophy from my perspective. Please understand, I don't anticipate that we're going to have a major war very shortly, and I don't see that prospect as very likely.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even see it on the horizon. But we've got a lot of history that suggests that it is possible, and certainly in my business, it has to be thinkable.